My truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope, and you guys know I love a spicy read, but what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot. Literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay. You're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight, but then boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak of the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com. You're allowed to want a better partner. You're allowed to want to be with someone who makes you feel safe and supported, and that you feel like you can sort of shed the outer layer that you show to the rest of the world. But to be with someone that makes you feel like you gained weight, they wouldn't love you anymore, how can you ever shed that outer layer with them? Within a relationship, we're supposed to be able to feel safe and comfortable, and like literally none of that matters. This person doesn't sound like someone you're going to be able to do that with. And listen, maybe there are people out there that are happy with these surface level, very conditional on the physical ass relationships, but I wouldn't be happy with that. And it doesn't sound like you're happy with that too. And I'm sorry that the people in your life are not supportive of you wanting something better for yourself.
What's up, members of Lover Girls Worldwide?
Welcome back to another episode of Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party, which is pretty gay. A weekly slumber party sounds gay to me. Happy Pride to all of my members of Lover Girls Worldwide. Welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, co-hosted by the girl who always comes in right on time, always clocks in for her shift right when I need her, Miss Mango the Gooey Girl, keeper of my heart, best girl in the whole world. Kittens are still here. They're still kicking. I have them for 2 more days. 48 more hours with these girls, and I am bracing myself for that ending. I think it's a good thing that I'm going to Spain, because I think I would be much more sad about the kittens leaving if I was in this apartment. I think having them leave and then just having to be like, well, the kittens are gone. That would have been a lot harder for me than what is actually going to happen, which is the kittens are leaving and then I'm leaving like 24 hours later to go to Spain with 24 of you guys, which is going to be so much fun. And I am so looking forward to that. So it's nice timing, but also, wow, my first experience fostering. This is going to be my first experience saying goodbye to my foster kittens, and what a new pack of emotions that I will be gifted on that day. In 48 hours, I will feel things that I've never felt before. How exciting is that? And I posted on my Instagram the other day just asking, like, to people who foster emotionally, how do you do it? How do you say goodbye at the end of it all? Like, I know that that's the goal. Goodbye is the goal. And like what a joy it is to be able to provide a safe, comfortable, loving home for these kittens before they find their forever home. It's a beautiful thing that is full of its own kind of love and reward in of itself, and that doesn't need to be a forever thing, but it's also just like, you grow an attachment to these little animals, having to take care of them. I think especially with them being sick and really having been in the trenches with them. But yeah, it's over. And it's been really such a rewarding experience. I'll go get them at the end of the show and introduce you guys to them before I sign off. Give you guys one final look at the girls before they leave. And hopefully I get more fosters a little later in the summer when I'm back in New York for more of an extended period of time. And we get to do it all over again. And we get to be Maddie and Mangoes. Foster home, Maddie and Mango's foster home for sweetie hearts and lover girls. Yeah, listen, we cook up the sweetest of hearts in here. You come, you stay at my foster home, you leave the sweetest girl imaginable. I only cook up affectionate kittens over here, okay? We socialize them to be lover girls through and through, so I'll have some more fosters later in the summer, and that'll be nice. And I'm just trying to cling on to, like, this is a good thing and it's a successful thing and goodbye is the goal. And like, what a beautiful moment we had. And yeah, who knows? Maybe I'll get to see how they grow up. Maybe I'll get to, I don't know, maybe whoever adopts them will make a little Instagram account for them that I can keep. Just take a look at every now and then. But I'm also trying to accept that that probably won't happen, and I probably won't know what happens to them past this point, and that's fine. That is okay. I'm trying to convince myself to believe that. I said this to my friends the other night at dinner, and I was like, maybe this sounds intense, but I feel like over the last 3 weeks, I have just felt like I've done a lot of good healing, and I've been in a very good place mentally the last few weeks, like progressing over the last 3 weeks, I would say. And I think the cats have played like a major part in that. It's crazy to be like, focusing on the care of these tiny little fragile, precious animals helped me learn how to take better care of myself. But I actually, in a weird way, feel that it did. I think that, and this is something I've talked about in therapy a lot, but a lot of times when I'm having a bad day or I'm really struggling and I just need like to take a beat and a breather and take care of myself, a lot of the time I will not do that, even though I know that I should, because there's a voice inside my head that's like, no, you're lying. You're making it all up. Like, just fucking get up and do your shit. Check the stuff off your to-do list. Like, what is wrong with you? Get up and do it. And I just like force myself to push through because I almost won't believe myself when I'm having a difficult time. I think this happens especially in times of like prolonged difficult times or like a prolonged, emotional thing that I'm going through. If I'm having like a bad day that is isolated to this bad day, like I think a quick sickness, I tend to be pretty good about like taking a beat because I'm like, okay, I know the start and end of this. But I think with things that I know are going to span a long time and it's going to take me a long time to feel better about, when I'm having a really hard day with one of those things, it's like I can't convince myself to take the time and space because I'm like, oh, what are we going to do? Are we going to do this several times a week, every week? Like, is that sustainable? Do I really have the time to take care of myself to that degree? Which I should. I really should. And I should prioritize that. And I think I am lucky enough to be in a position where I can prioritize that. So that's something that I need to reflect on and think about more. But anyways, I feel like having to take care of the kittens and having to spend a good amount of my day with them, socializing them, doing all their medicines and whatnot, and just like giving them love and attention and introducing them to the world, having that be on my
to-do list that is like a non-fucking negotiable, it has helped me be like, I don't know, just restructure what's important in my day. So I feel like in the morning, it's like, what's most important? Taking care of the cats. Then I go and I do some of my work and then I pause and I go take care of those fucking cats. And it's like sitting and pausing with them and taking care of them in a way has like really helped me take care of me. And it's easier for me to make the choice and do that because it's for someone else. It's for the cats. It's not for me. You know, I'm not pausing for my own mental health. I'm pausing to take care of the cats, but it really does help my own mental health. But because it's not about me, it feels easier for me to like believe is important, which I know is like, I should believe that it's important even when it's just about me, but it's harder. And yeah, so I feel like I discovered something really great, a way to help myself care more, care better for me, is caring for animals, caring for others. And like, what an awesome discovery that has been. I'm going to be sad when they leave, but I'm excited that this went so well, and I'm excited to continue fostering. But at the very end of this episode, I will bring them out, introduce them to you guys for the first and the last time. My first two foster girls. But for now, we've got so much juice, so many secrets, so many requests to dive into. So why don't we just fucking get into it here? Hi, Maddie. I love your podcast and I am in need of some advice. Not too long ago, a guy I liked slid up on my stories and was instantly flirty. I was very forward and asked him on a date, to which he agreed. We had texted back and forth and I felt like I was the one initiating everything, but eventually we went on the date. The date felt more interviewy and didn't feel like much of a connection, so I eventually just told him that and went on my way. A few weeks passed, we see each other at an event and our conversation was a lot more chill and casual and a little bit steamy. And crazy enough, things have turned a little bit more steamy recently that we have shared our love for a TV show and spent over an hour one night texting about it and some of the more sexy scenes in it. It might just be the fact that I'm looking for a summer fling or I'm just horny, but I'm back considering asking him out again. I wonder if at the time I didn't really know him that well and I may have just pushed him away before giving him that chance. It also doesn't help that I have avoidant tendencies. I also just wonder if he's doing it because he wants to hook up or is it that he wants to be my friend, maybe. Regardless, do you think it's weird if I ask him out again or just wait and see what he does? I hate being so forward, especially since I have friends who say it should be the man's job to ask the woman out, and I also worry it'll look more like desperation than interest since I've already done it once. But also, a girl has needs. What should I do? For starters, fuck what your friends are saying. For one, I think that you should always ask out who you want to ask out. I don't encourage the sit around princess in a tower waiting forever, never go and ask someone out because you're a woman and men do that. Like, you can ask out whoever the fuck you want to ask out. I also understand wanting to be asked out, but don't feel like you can't ask someone out just because you're a woman and a man should be asking you out. That's dumb. That's stupid and dumb. You know, we can want other people to ask us out. We can want to be pursued and also be the one pursuing. That's fine. Both things can exist and, in my opinion, should exist. So that's for one. Just had to get that off my chest. I mean, honestly, if you want to, I think you should go for it. There's no reason not to. Sometimes we cut things off too soon. We go on one date and the date isn't too good and we call it off that one date. But perhaps he's a little nervy. Perhaps he was going through a strange time. Perhaps it's just the circumstances you meet each other in. You guys have crossed paths again. You seem to have a better connection this time around. I don't think there's anything wrong with reopening the door and expressing, you know, wanting to give it another try and go on another date. I feel like he probably wouldn't make that move since you were the one that rejected him. But I think it's totally fine for you to be like, you know what? I feel like we've connected recently. Would you want to give going out on a date another shot? I think that's totally fine. And honestly, it would be a super bold move. Sweet. I say go for it. If that's what you're feeling, if that's what you want. Like, sometimes we make the wrong call. And I don't think that just because you shut things down once because you're like, oh, maybe we don't have a connection. If you decide, if you discover later on that perhaps there is a connection, I don't think there's any reason why you shouldn't explore that just because it didn't work at one point in the past or it was shut down too soon at one point in the past. Never too late to be a little bit vulnerable and say, you know what? I'm feeling a little something for you. How do I deal with being jealous of my boyfriend's best friend? This is such a classic situation, but I'm so conflicted, so I would love to hear your thoughts. I've been dating my childhood best friend for a year, long distance, different colleges, we're all 21. I've known him forever, and I trust him with my whole heart. His friend, let's call her Rachel, is also someone I've known forever because all three of us went to the same schools. My boyfriend and I had crushes on each other in middle and high school, but nothing came of it, and we drifted apart for a couple years and dated other people. During that time, he liked Rachel for a year and eventually asked her out. She said no, but they remained really close. When I reconnected with him and we eventually started dating, she expressed to him that she didn't like me but didn't reveal why because she didn't want to make me look bad. Which is fine, I don't care, but that's a weird thing to say for no reason because I really want to know what reasons that she has. She leans on him a lot for emotional support and comfort as well. Regardless, I respect their friendship until now. She's flying to visit him for a whole week because she's going through a lot and needs to be with a close friend. He asked me if it was okay and I said yes, but I can't shake my jealousy off. I've always felt like she was smarter and prettier than me. He used to like her, and now they're going to be together alone for a week. Is it okay for them to share a bed as friends? I trust my boyfriend, and he goes above and beyond to show me he loves me and he cares. I can't express discomfort because he's going to think I don't trust him. How do I handle this situation well? Please help. Sorry if this was long, but I love your podcast and you give great advice. Number one, never apologize for sending in a long message to the box. I love them. Number two, you said, I can't express discomfort because he's going to think I don't trust him. I'm going to challenge you on that a little bit. You can express discomfort. Part of the wonderful, beautiful thing about being in a trusting and supportive relationship is having a safe space to express your discomforts in a way that honors your connection and to be heard by your partner when you express those discomforts. It is completely 100% valid to feel a little uncomfortable to hear that your boyfriend is going to be sharing a bed with one of his girlfriends that has expressed a dislike of you in the past. That's fair. From the way that you wrote this, you seem like a great partner. You seem like someone that wants your partner to keep their friends around and keep them close, and you're supportive of your boyfriend and his friends, despite the fact that she may not have been the nicest to you in the past. And I think that is very big of you to choose to take the path of like, you know what? This is one of my boyfriend's best friends. It means a lot to him. I'm willing to just sort of put that to the side here and be supportive of the fact that this is one of his best friends. But I also think it's fine to have boundaries within that support. It is fine for you to say, listen, I love that you guys are besties. Love that you guys are hanging out for the week. Please don't share a bed. That's fair. You know, that's a fair boundary to say. I love that for you and your friendship. It would make me uncomfortable if you guys were sleeping in the same bed together every night. That is fair. That is a fair boundary for you to set, especially given the context of her having sort of said nasty things about you in the past, which would bother me the most out of all of it, I think, personally. I think if that part didn't exist, that would change the context of everything else for me and make it a little bit more lighthearted. But the fact that she's spoken poorly about you and there's this very intimate friendship going on, I wouldn't like that either. You can have trust in a relationship and still set boundaries. Just because you and your boyfriend have trust doesn't mean you're not allowed to express discomfort in him sharing a bed with another woman. You know, just because you trust that it would never escalate, just because you trust that he wouldn't cross any like physical boundaries in like a sexual way, just because you trust him not to do that doesn't mean you're not allowed to feel uncomfortable with it. You know, you're allowed to feel uncomfortable about the fact that he's potentially sharing a bed for a week with a woman that has talked shit about you in the past. Yes, that is fair. And yes, you are allowed to express that discomfort. And no, you expressing that discomfort is not an indicator that you don't trust him. These things can exist at the same time. You can both trust him and also be uncomfortable with this setup. I get that sometimes sharing these discomforts can feel hard because you don't want your partner to feel bad. But I think that largely the way that we communicate these discomforts can prevent that in the first place. You know, you're not coming at him accusing him of anything. You're coming at him from a place of vulnerability and openness and sharing a piece of your heart and saying, like, you know, I love you. Something that I love about you is what a good friend you are, how supportive of a friend you are, and I never want to get in the way of that. However, you sharing a bed with her would make me uncomfortable. And it's not because I don't trust you. It's just because that seems to blur a line between friendship and relationship in a way that I am uncomfortable with, given the context of my own relationship with her and things that she has said about you in the past. And, you know, I wonder if there is a way to open up this conversation even more into being a conversation between you and the best friend to sort of squash the beef that never was a real beef. Because I feel like that's part of what makes this so difficult is you maybe having a more strained relationship with her because she has said nasty things about you in the past or insinuated that she didn't like you for a reason that she wouldn't say out loud. You know, it might be a good idea to open up that conversation with her, try to squash that, and perhaps it would make it easier to sort out the boundaries and the discomfort with your partner. It's tough, though. These are hard conversations. I'm not saying they're easy by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that it is important for you to express your discomfort and to talk through it with your partner in finding that solution. I don't think the solution is swallowing your discomfort because to say it out loud would mean you don't trust him. I don't think that's true. I think that you can express your discomfort and work through that with your partner in a way that only strengthens your trust of each other. We want our partners to have friends. We want our partners to have tons of beautiful, wonderful friendships, but we want those friendships to also respect our relationship. And hopefully they will be able to hear you, and this will be like a really wonderful, productive conversation that will just enhance your trust and bring you guys closer together. But stop minimizing yourself and stop minimizing your discomfort and telling yourself that you're not allowed to feel that way. Jealousy is a like hard emotion to sit with, but it's a common one and it's one that we all feel. And your jealousy in this situation is not coming from nowhere. And you know what? In a lot of ways, I wouldn't even call it jealousy. That almost feels like not the right word to describe what it is that you are going through in this situation. I think that what you are feeling right now is something that most people would feel in your position. And you sound like someone that really wants to handle this in the right way and to be respectful to your partner and to be the most supportive person to your partner, which is wonderful. And I love that about you. But I also really want you to take care of your own heart and make sure that you are not shrinking yourself for someone else because you think that you have to or you think that bringing it up would hurt them, because it shouldn't be that way. It should be literally the exact opposite. Hi, Maddie. I've been a huge fan of both your videos and the podcast for some time now. I've always enjoyed how thoughtful you are, and I just want to start off by saying thank you for all the amazing content you provide. Thank you. For a bit of context, growing up, I was pretty heavy, both as a young kid and a teen. My family and my classmates always made sure I felt embarrassed about it. Only now, as a young adult, have I begun to heal my relationship with food and feel good about my body. I've been working out for the past 2 years and have become decently muscular, but still with a fair bit of padding. I quite like my body. For the past 6 months, I've been seeing a woman and things have been mostly great. She and I have a real connection, and I felt so comfortable being vulnerable with her and having real conversations. Things hit the fan when we were at my parents' house and her and my mom were looking through family photos. They both started laughing and my girlfriend said, "Holy shit, you really were a fat ass." I know this was supposed to be a joke and I should get over it, but I felt so hurt. I awkwardly laughed with them and just tried to move on. Things carried on as normal, but inside, I was still in shambles. Hearing a comment like that from her just brought all of that pain and insecurity rushing back. I know the smart thing to do would be to communicate, but I felt like I had no right to give her a hard time since it was just her and my mom joking. I just tried to move forward and bury my feelings. Fast forward to about a week ago, we had been intimate and were cuddling, and she had her hand on my chest. She then slaps my chest and said, "Please don't ever gain that weight back. I couldn't ever imagine being under a fatty," and laughed. Instantly, the mood was gone and all of the pain and insecurity was back. Again, I laughed it off and we went to bed. I woke up early the next morning and left without a word. I know that's very immature, but I felt embarrassed and didn't want to cry. I texted her that I needed some time to think about our relationship. My friends say that I'm being dramatic. Even my mom called me and said I need to be a fucking man and get over it. My girlfriend knows that it was those comments that got to me, but still hasn't apologized. I know that I can end a relationship for any reason. I've just been wondering if I'm being too dramatic and throwing away an otherwise great relationship over a few mean comments. I apologize for the ramble. I'm wishing you and Mango the best. First of all, to start here, I wouldn't beat yourself up for not knowing how to handle those jokes and not knowing how to call them out to your girlfriend. In the heat of the moment, when someone says something hurtful to us, sometimes it takes us a moment to adjust, our brains a second to calibrate and understand and take in what we just heard and know how to proceed there. Do not beat yourself up for not immediately calling your girlfriend out when that was said the first time or the second time. Yes, you know, when we're sitting here talking about the things that happen in our lives and the best ways to handle them, or when we're preemptively talking about all the things that could happen and how we would stand up for ourselves in all these hypothetical situations, we can say all of these things, and in the heat of the moment, we still might not do the things we said we were going to do. We might not stand up for ourselves in the heat of the moment. We might just laugh along and be quiet and stay inside our heads and process and figure out how we're going to react. And a week later, 2 weeks later, we're able to have the confrontation that we couldn't have in the moment. Sometimes that is a very human reaction, and I wouldn't beat yourself up for having that. Okay. That's one. Two, it feels to me that it should be obvious to any grown adult that that is an unacceptable joke to make and an unacceptable sentence to say to a partner, period. For your partner to understand the complicated relationship that you have had with your body and still make those comments is so deeply reckless. And in my opinion, is not how you treat someone that you claim to love. And I think what really makes this situation bad is that you've now learned that it wasn't a joke. That when they were going through those family photos and they made that joke, that it wasn't actually a joke. Because a week later, you guys are in bed and they outright say to you that they would not want to be with you if you gained weight. If your body looked the way that it looked in those photos, which is so mean, it is cruel, and that is an unkind thing to say to someone that you love. That is you in those photos. It's not a different person. That is you. You were that person. You still are that person. And when you're in a relationship with someone, you want to believe that the person you're with is loving every version of you that ever existed. That the person you're with loves you now, would have loved you then, and has, you know, decidedly chosen to love you forever, hopefully, right? You're hoping that the person that you're with loves you unconditionally, will love you as your body changes throughout your life, and that their love is deeper than physical. Now we have learned that their love seems pretty conditional on the physical. And that, to me, is not love. And it doesn't seem like that's love to you either. I'm so mad that people in your life are calling you dramatic about this. It's completely fucking unacceptable. And you're allowed to want a partner that loves all versions of you, that loves your body in every form, in every way, shape possible. you're allowed to want a better partner. You're allowed to want to be with someone who makes you feel safe and supported, and that you feel like you can sort of shed the outer layer that you show to the rest of the world. But to be with someone that makes you feel like you gained weight, they wouldn't love you anymore, how can you ever shed that outer layer with them? You're going to have to put on the same performance with them as you would to, like, you know, the other parts of society, the world, that make you feel like you have to behave and look a certain way in order to be worthy of love. Within a relationship, we're supposed to be able to shed those fears. Within a relationship, we're supposed to be able to feel safe and comfortable, and, like, literally none of that matters. This person doesn't sound like someone you're going to be able to do that with. And listen, maybe there are people out there that are happy with these surface level, very conditional on the physical ass relationships, but I wouldn't be happy with that. And it doesn't sound like you're happy with that too. And I'm sorry that the people in your life are not supportive of you wanting something better for yourself. That's fucked up. You're allowed to be hurt by what was said to you. And I haven't even gotten to the fact that they know that this hurt your feelings and they still haven't fucking apologized. That is a red flag. If there wasn't enough red flags up until this point, that's a clear as fuck red flag. If we're giving your partner the absolute biggest, most major benefit of the doubt and saying, okay, maybe it was a joke that was made in really poor taste, and maybe they had no idea what a horrible thing that was to say to someone, and maybe they didn't know how shitty it would feel to learn that your relationship was dependent on your physical body that you've had such a tumultuous relationship with throughout your life. Let's assume that it was all some big mistake, which to me feels fucking absurd. And there is no universe where that is the truth, but let's pretend for the sake of it all that this could somehow be a misunderstanding and they didn't know. If you learned that you accidentally hurt your partner in such a deep way, you touched a wound that was, like, deep inside of them, a trauma, a difficult relationship that they've had throughout their whole life. If you learned that you accidentally hurt your partner in that way, wouldn't you be like, oh my God, I need to fix this? Wouldn't your first reaction be like scrambling to make things right, scrambling to apologize and set the record straight and make sure your partner knows that they are loved completely as they are and you made a stupid fucking joke that you regret deeply? If that is not your first fucking reaction, throw the "it was just a joke" card right out the fucking window. Which I think we could have thrown the "it was just a joke" card right out the window when they made that comment to you in bed. I think we could have thrown it out then and there, but we can extra throw it out now that they haven't apologized after knowing that they hurt you. That is a red fucking flag. To be with someone that is so careless with their words like that is so... to have their love be so conditional on the physical, and in a moment where they have deeply hurt you, they choose not to apologize. Fuck that. I think it is completely fine to break up over this. In fact, I would even encourage it. Body image stuff is so close to home for me, and it seems like it is close to home for you. And this is why I get fired up about stuff like this, because I can't imagine ever being happy in a partnership like this. I think I would be insecure for the entire duration of the relationship. I don't think that I could ever feel like I could shed that outer layer with them. I think that I would be performing for that partner for the rest of my life. That there was always, like, a gun held to my head. That the love was so conditional that if my body changed, that if anything happened to me, that if, you know, my body changed in any way, may it be weight or aging or, God forbid, an accident, like, being in a partnership that is dependent on the physical is never going to be for me. Never in my life will it be for me, because I think those people are shallow and stupid. And that is not love to me. And I think that my heart is so fucking big and I'm capable of so much love, and I want to find a great big love with someone that loves in the unconditional, so much more than physical way that I do. And I think you should find that person too, because you deserve that. And no, you're not dramatic.
I am so sorry that the people in your life have not been supportive of you in the aftermath of this. They absolutely should have been. Nobody should have been telling you to just man up and take what your girlfriend said to you. That's fucking ridiculous. You deserved support in the aftermath of this happening, and I'm so sorry you didn't get it. So I just want to give you all the affirmation that you need. You're not being dramatic. This is absolutely a reason to end the relationship, and this never should have been said to you. And I'm so sorry that it was. But there are so many people out there that will not treat you like this, that wouldn't even fucking dream of it. Something crazy happened this week. Something really crazy. I started hearing noises, bass rumblings. I started hearing house music. I started sweating a little bit. I was, you know, in the heat of it all, there was quite a sizzle about, and I started hallucinating. Maybe it was the heat. I could have been hallucinating. I could have been deep in a hallucination, but I could have sworn that I saw six-pack abs. I could have fucking sworn that I saw some juicy buns. Some have said. I was fighting, right? I didn't know if it was like a sleep paralysis demon or what was going on, but I was fighting in my sleep. House music, six-pack abs, sweat, hot, hotter than hell, babes. And then, in the background, when I'm trying to fight through this hallucination, I see a million-dollar villa in Mallorca. And I said, no, it can't be.
No, it can't.
But alas, it was. Standing at the door of the million-dollar villa in Mallorca was none other than Maya Jama. Maya Jama was standing at that door, and I walked up to her, and she looked me dead in the eyes, and she said, it's gonna be a long, hot summer. Bum, bum.
Let's go, Lover Girls Assemble. It's time for Love Island, baby. Let's go. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's time to have fun and enjoy our lives. And happiness resumes and everything is good. And I've never been sad during a Love Island season. The Americans are here. I've made it. My VPN is working and I'm caught up, babes. We're watching Love Island season 11. Plug in, get your shit working, because it's going to be a long, hot summer. All right, we're in. We're getting in there. I'm worming my way inside.
No, really, I am worming my way inside. I'm going to Mallorca in fucking 4 days. Oh, if I see anyone at the fucking airport, if I see anyone that looks like they could be a Love Island contestant, guess who I'm asking to take a photo with? It's gonna be so reminiscent of my Abercrombie and Fitch model, Gilly Hicks model outside the mall door days. I'm like, you look sexy. Can I take a picture with you? Love Island is back. It's here. It's happening. I am the happiest I've been all year. And that's the truth. And that's the cold, hard truth, America. Before I dive into talking about what happened through the first couple episodes of Love Island, I need to set the parameters here of what's going to be going on this Love Island season. Throughout the other Love Island seasons, I've shifted the posting days of the podcast to be on Fridays so that I can talk about the full week of the week before. This season, instead of doing that, I'm just gonna operate on my own schedule. The podcast will still be going live on Fridays. I record the podcast on Wednesdays. So I will talk about every episode
Wednesday to Tuesday. So this week is short because it started on Monday. So I'm only talking about Monday and Tuesday's episode. Okay? We're not talking about Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, the day that you're watching this episode. We got it. But in future weeks, I'll have like a full week to talk about. It'll just be Wednesday to Tuesday instead of Sunday to Friday. Got it? And this will be actually better because I'll be talking about things closer to real time because I'm not waiting a whole week to talk about what happened. Okay? We're all clued in. That's how we're doing it this season. So we're in it.
The island is all back in the villa, babes.
Introducing our OG Islanders. Here's our cast for the season. The starting of the season. Our starting lineup. We've got Nicole, Jess, Patsy, Mimi, Samantha, and Harriet for the girls. And for the guys, we've got Sean, Sam, Io, Munveer, Kieran, and Ronnie. I've got thoughts. So right off the bat here, there is no universe where I'm going to be able to tell these women apart from each other. The brunettes all look identical, and the blondes look identical. Samantha and Harriet look the fucking same, and Nicole, Jess, and Patsy look the fucking same. My brain cannot for the life of me tell them apart. I'm hoping this gets easier as episodes go by, but I really feel like they picked people that they all look identical to each other. There are no visual differences between any of these people. I was like, oh, brother, as I was watching that first episode, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to tell any of them apart. But listen, this is not news. Love Island has a casting problem and literally always has. I don't know what their deal is, why they're refusing to improve, because it's like there's clearly a demand for better casting. There are a wide range of hot people out there. Why on earth do we have three people that look so fucking identical? I cannot tell the difference between them. Hot people have different faces. Like, Mimi's carrying the team on her back right now. Love Island, what's your problem? Love Island casting department, what aversion do y'all have to diversity? Because I would love more diverse hot people. I think most people would like more diverse hot people, if not for the sole reason so that I can tell them apart. Okay? I would love diversity for so many reasons, but maybe the only reason that you might care about as producers of the show is me being able to tell apart everyone in your fucking cast so I can talk about them and report accurately as a member of the press. I'm fucking kidding. I'm kidding. Love Island cast more than like three people of color challenge. Can they do it? Multiple people came in that villa and were like, yeah, my last relationship was 4 months ago. Someone said four and like two people said 6 months ago, which to each their own, but that seems pretty fast, especially considering you would have had to put in your application for this show several months ago at this point. So did you break up with your partner and then immediately think to yourself, oh my God, how am I ever going to get over them? How am I going to get through this? I know. I'm going to go on Love Island. Like, that must have been the thought process, because I'm assuming 4 to 6 months, like, that's, you're telling me that like you basically ended this relationship and immediately were like itv.com/Love Island casting. Like, there's no way. That is such a quick, it's a quick turnaround regardless. Like, I don't personally understand how you can go through a breakup and then 4 to 6 months later be ready to date again. To each their own. I will never fucking understand that. But especially knowing that you have to apply to Love Island several months beforehand. So it's like, damn, you were really fresh out of that relationship, like filling out the application, sending in photo scans of your ID to prove that you're old enough to be on the show. All because you went through a breakup. Like, some of y'all need to go to therapy. Some of y'all, instead of filling the void with another relationship, need to like seek actual help. But I digress. Kieran is the youngest in the cast, so it seems. He's 21 years old, and I already know I'm gonna find him fucking annoying. He said that his like ick or pet peeve was when girls take pictures or videos of their food at a restaurant, which is fucking dumb. Pick a better one. Women are like, I hate when men don't communicate and cheat on me. And men are like, I hate it when women use phone. Like, shut the fuck up. Just let her take a fucking picture of her food and post it on Instagram. And you know what? Fuck you, Karen. Next time you see a photo or video of some restaurant on your Instagram explore page and you think to yourself, oh, that looks yummy, I'd like to go dive in and, you know, indulge in some food there, I'm gonna bookmark this restaurant so I don't forget it, I need you to delete that right now. Delete it, fat. Take it off your phone. You're not allowed to go. You're not allowed to go because you said you hated when people took photos and videos of their fucking food and you just wanted them to eat. Shut up. Clearly I'm personally offended. Shut up, Kieran. You're not allowed to go to any restaurant that you discover on social media now, okay? Okay, just shut up. You're not invited. Delete it. So we're all here. We're having a good time, doing some mingling. Maya Jama comes in and she's like, oh, it's time to do a first impressions game. This game is basically just the girls are going to line up the boys based on most to least boyfriend material. And the boys are going to do the same thing for the girls. The girls' most to least boyfriend material, the most boyfriend material is Manveer, then Sean, Ronnie, Io, Sam, and Kieran. When I saw Sean, I was convinced that he was going to be the one in the cast that nobody was interested in. He just has that vibe to me. Usually there's like, I feel like anytime they cast a man with that vibe, where it's just like computer generated white boy of the month, when they cast those dudes, usually I feel like they're the ones that are people are like sort of like rah, whatever about. Maybe they're in a friendship couple with him and then he never really finds someone. I'm thinking of like the Hugos of the Love Island cinematic universe. Sean was striking me as that type, and so I was a little shocked that they put him second because I just didn't see that happening. Also, I'm learning, do British people not like mullets? Because I was shocked that nobody seemed that interested in Sam, and he was second to the bottom, when in my opinion, he's kind of a cutie. Manveer, very cute. Io, super cute. Sam, also pretty cute. Those were going to be the three that I was like, if I was on Love Island, and I had a gun pointed to my head, those three would have been at my top. But I don't know, it seems like the feedback that I've heard on this show is that the girls in that villa are not a big fan of mullets and they find him a little goofy looking. But he's got like a mullet and tattoos and I'm like, you would slay in Bushwick. You would eat it up out here. I don't know that the Love Island villa was made for you, Sam, but trust me, you could devour in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Don't you worry, bestie. And then the boys rank the girls from most to least. Most girlfriend material is Mimi, then Nicole, Jess, Patsy, Samantha, and Harriet. Which I have no feelings and opinions on because I can't tell any of them apart. And then after they did that, Maya revealed that they've basically just paired themselves up. The number ones, number twos, number threes, and so on. These are your starting matches, which I thought this was fun. This was a new, interesting way to start the season. Normally, they have them choose or the public will pair them up. This was a new way to spice things up and get those initial pairings rolling. I was a fan of this. So, starting couples. We've got Mimi and Manveer. Very sexy. I kind of loved this couple off first glance. Nicole and Sean, Jess and Ronnie, Patsy and Io, Samantha and Sam, and Harriet and Kieran. Now, I was a fan of Mimi and Manveer just based on this initial pairing, but it seems we learned very quickly that it doesn't seem like Mimi is very interested in Manveer, and Mimi is actually more interested in Io, and it seems like Io also wants Mimi. Manveer seems open. Maybe he wants Patsy, or perhaps it's just because he thinks that's a safe swap because Mimi seems to want to go for Io. Io's on the couple with Patsy now. Perhaps Manveer wants Patsy. We'll see. I'm not convinced that it's not just a safe swap at this point. Samantha wants Ronnie. Ronnie seems open-minded between Jess and Samantha. Harriet wants Kieran. Kieran maybe also wants her. Kieran also looks like someone I went to college with, and it's tripping me up. I took like a screenshot and sent it to my roommate from college and was like, fucking look at this man. Is this not like the Yossified version of our one friend from college? And she was like, holy shit. I'm like, right? Crazy. His face is like copy pasted one of our friends from college. Wild. Nicole and Sean are both the most boring. And my hypothesis right off the bat here was that they weren't going to last long in the villa. I was like, the fact that they were paired up and I'm just so bored by both of them already. You're not lasting long here, babes. All right. You got to go. So that's sort of the update after the pairing. They're all socializing. We're still figuring out who wants who. Drama is still, you know, yet to develop here. These are just the early stages of the who's interested, who's not interested, what the vibes are. Sort of thing. Maya Jama shows up, and with her is the first bombshell of the season. Reading you my notes for this section are gonna be a good fun time. His name is Joey, and the first thing, because I have my notes open while I'm watching the show, the first thing I wrote here is, my man looks like Rob fucking Dyrdek. What the fuck are they doing with the first bombshell being a Rob Dyrdek lookalike? Like, usually first bombshell, we're sending in like fucking Ekin Sue. We're sending in fucking Maura Higgins. Like, we're sending in a real jaw dropper. And I felt like all of a sudden it was just like, welcome to ridiculousness. Whatever the fuck the ridiculous theme song is, I was like, who is this guy? And so I'm sitting here typing away like, wait, what the fuck? And everyone sitting in that fire pit is like, oh my god, it's Joey Essex. And I was like, wait, hold on, this man is famous? Like, I just thought he was a random fucking guy, and I'm here like, Rob Dyrdek's bouncing on into the villa, and meanwhile they're like, oh my god, it's Joey Essex. I'm like, I don't know who the fuck this is. Who is Joey Essex? I looked him up. He's like some reality TV star. I still don't really know who Joey Essex is. I don't know the lore too extensively, but I understand that he is a previously famous reality TV star who is known for having very little common knowledge. And everyone's so excited that he's here. I'm so excited that he's here too. And I'm so excited that I have now learned who Joey Essex is. And I'd love to learn more. And I'm eager to learn more. I'm listening and I'm learning. And I'm so sorry that I thought he was a Rob Dyrdek equivalent. I mean, maybe he is. I mean, Rob Dyrdek is also like a reality TV personality. Maybe he is the Rob Dyrdek equivalent. I just know that all of a sudden when I realized he was like a thing and everyone knew him and was excited he was here, I was like, whoa, I'm deeply unplugged with what's happening in the British world. What is going on? And anyways, my man's got three women that want him, which is crazy. Then we get to our first, like, real challenge, Maya Jama not present, and it's a phone challenge is what they're calling it, where basically they're just pulling a phone out of a bucket, and whoever Love Island phone it is, has to do a truth or dare, or it's just a dare. I don't think it's a truth. It's just simply a dare. Here's the things that happen. Mimi and Io kiss. Harriet gives Kieran a lap dance. Io kisses both Mimi and Nicole for the, like, who you'd want a three-way with question. Joey snogs the three islanders he fancies the most, and it is Samantha, who she said the kiss contained a lot of teeth. Interesting feedback on Joey Essex. And then he also kissed Harriet and Nicole, which I think were the three girls that said that they liked him off the bat. I could be wrong. I guess I don't really know who these people are. Love Island also played Von Dutch during this challenge, which, like, taste. This is why I watched the show. Patsy sucks the finger of Manveer and Ronnie. Sam kisses the neck of Samantha. Kieran has to snog two islanders he wants to share a bed with, and he picks Harriet and Nicole. Like, Sean, I literally wrote in my notes, Sean, brother, you are going home. You will never get to know what's going on there. Samantha snogs the Islander she had an instant connection with, and she picks Ronnie, which is like a little sad because Sam just kissed her neck for like the same question for him. And I was like kind of shocked because I think Sam is kind of sexier than Ronnie, but what do I know? Clearly me and the Brits have very different opinions on these things. Ronnie has to snog the two girls with the best bodies, and he picks Jess and Harriet, not Samantha, after she just picked him over her Sam, which, yikes, Roonies. And then it's time for Joey Essex. After he's settled in, we've played a game or two. I think we make it to the next day. Time for Joey Essex to decide who he wants to couple up with. But the stakes are high here in that whoever Joey Essex decides to couple up with, their partner will be dumped from the villa. So Joey, drumroll please, decides that he is going to couple up with Samantha, dumping Sam, my mullet king, from the villa. What the F? What the hell? Not that I was really riding for him. I think I'm riding for Munveer right now. I think he's my king. He's my king of the season so far. But I liked the mullet. It was working for me and nobody was interested. So I was like, I kind of wanted him to stick around because I was just like, is it just this survey of British women, or do British people just like, they're not into the mullet the way that it's like super in over here? I'm like, the mullet pulls in Bushwick, okay? The mullet pulls over here. So then the fact that I'm seeing a mullet in the Love Island villa and people are like, oh, I don't know, he's got a mullet. I'm like, really? It doesn't work over there? Because it really works over here. People be throwing puss for a mullet, okay? Don't underestimate it. So I thought that he was going to last for longer. I was a little shocked. And those are the two episodes of the week. So bing, bang, boom, baby. We just smacked it out of the park. That's week one of Love Island. Well, not really, because our week is offset now. So that's episode one of me talking about this season of Love Island. Crazy Town USA. I cannot believe that the next time you hear me talk about this show, I'm going to be in the place where it fucking happens, baby. I'm going to be in the fucking place where it happens. We're going to be in the Love Island country. We're going to be in Spain while they're in Spain. Next podcast episode, I will be coming at you live. Not live. I'll be coming at you from Spain. I'll be with Ashley, so we'll have lots to talk about next week. We'll have so much to catch up on, and it will be so glorious for us to dive in and really get into the juice together. But I'm going to go hang out with the girls and probably do some more work before my day ends. It is 9:00 right now, so it's time for me to wrap it up, have some dinner for myself. But before I do that, let me go grab the girls and let you take a peek at them before they leave me. Welcome to the show, Chirp and Roar. Right here on my left side, I've got Miss Roar, and on my right, I've got Chirp.
Hello, girls.
Hello, girls. Say hello.
So with that, I'm going to go let these girls play around and have ourselves a nice little night together. I love you guys so much. Thanks so much for listening, for hanging out, and I will see you next week.
Bye.